This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for dialing us in here on WGN Radio. I'm John Williams, and Pete Zimmerman produces, and a regular guest and sometimes host is Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, the LaSalleNetwork.com. Hi, Tom.
Hey, John Williams. How are you?
Good. Let's as we often do, talk about job openings, a new high here in America, right?
We've got a million more than we ever had before, so it's a new world. But the good news is that whether you're COVID-friendly or not COVID-friendly, whether you want to work remotely or go into an office, there are jobs available.
Yeah, I know it's a very frustrating topic for a lot of people who want to see services produced more quickly, and they think, where are the workers? Why aren't they working? But on the upside, it sure is an opportunity for just about anybody and everybody, right?
There's an opportunity, and I think we've gotten past this situation of do you want to go into an office? Are you afraid of COVID? And now we have this political situation of vaccines and Delta variant. But at the end of the day, companies are hiring. There are jobs available in every single industry, in every city, in every state in this country. And it's a good opportunity for people to get in and make their mark. And it's what's a shame is people are trying to tell entrepreneurs what they should do, and instead you either take a job or you don't, but you have to live with the consequences.
And I presume those jobs are mostly then in the service sector, restaurants, food, retail, that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, that's always been the case, that those jobs, they're more easier to get and they're available, and we have with restaurants opening, but it's really not. There's IT jobs, there's call center jobs, supply chain, accounting, finance, marketing, healthcare. This is as good, and I've said this to you every week I'm on, John, this is as good an economy as I've seen in my 25 years of working, and I think it's as good as we're going to see for a long, long time. So if you're not working, it's because you don't want to.
You guys are actually doing a job webinar, right, for veterans?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a big believer. I never served in the military, but the reason we have our freedom, the reason we were able to overcome what happened, that travesty, is that we have the best armed forces and military in the world, and that now is on a purely volunteer basis. And if we don't help our veterans when they come back, we're really turning our back on our very country and our freedom. So we opened up LaSalle Veterans Network last year, and it's our way of giving back to the armed forces and helping veterans and their families and military spouses, and helping them the best we can. And that is to coach them up on how to get a job and where the jobs are for them.
Talk about the military spouses. What are you doing there?
The same exact thing is you've got military veterans, and you've got people in the military, and they've got spouses who are, you know, quote unquote civilians, even though they're married to members of the military, and they want jobs and they need jobs, whether they're at Great Lakes by us or they're in military bases around the country. Is that how do they go about getting a job? Where's their, if they were raising families while their spouse was overseas, you know, we're coming out of a 20-year war in Afghanistan and the Middle East. You've got a lot of spouses now that those troops are coming home and saying, okay, it's my turn to work. What do I do? How do I do it? And if we don't help them, who is?
So if I click on the LaSalleNetwork.com, can I navigate pretty quickly to find out how to sign up for this August 24th?
Absolutely. I'm very comfortable that we have a user-friendly website, and you can also Google LaSalle Veteran Network, and it should pop up and take you right there as well. It's something we're really proud of in this initiative, and I've got two military veterans of the Armed Services who are on our team working part of LaSalle Network that lead this for us. We couldn't do more power.
Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. Thank you, Tom. We'll visit next week. Wintrust Business Lunch continues on WGN with Philip Weiss, president of Seyfarth at Work, Seyfarth.com. I'll spell that for you in just a minute. As always, welcome back to the show. Philip, how are you today?
Great, and thanks for having me, John.
I wanted to talk about vaccines and how employers and employees are dealing with the possible mandates. But before we get to that, I just wondered if you had anything to say about Governor Cuomo's resignation and the fact that a lot of the things that he was citing as innocent banter are the very sorts of things that are red flags in the workplace as well. It's amazing that we still need to have this conversation, but I guess it doesn't hurt to repeat some of the rules or ask you what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, you know, whenever a story like this makes national headlines, it basically puts a microscope on something that a lot of people are always thinking about in the workplace, but are not quite sure kind of where they stand, where their conduct stands, and what kind of risks they're creating. So what we find really fascinating, to your point, John, is when we train executives and managers on the corporate side, and we talk about something like putting your arm on someone's back, you know, just saying good job, give them a tap on the back. We ask managers and executives, what do you think about that moment? Is that risky? Is that inappropriate? Is that kind of green or maybe yellow or red? And virtually all managers in many environments will say, that's totally fine. That's what we do to give somebody a good signal. But when we ask the same question, John, of a group of employees, how does that feel to you? The answer is very different. A lot of people say it's a little bit yellow, if not red, to me. And we say, why is that? And they'll say, you know, number one, it depends who in the management has their arm around me. It depends how long that arm is wrapped around my shoulder. Bottom line, it feels very different to an employee than someone of authority, even when it's an arm around the shoulder, let alone a hug. So we're in the new territory with much more awareness by executives.
As a person who's done that 1,000 times with listeners at events over the years, I can assure you my body language and mindset are completely different now. I don't put my arm around the shoulder, not that I have in the last 18 months anyway, but you won't see me putting my arm around somebody mugging for a photo anymore, although that was the way we used to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing looking back over the last year because of high-profile cases and the even more high-profile COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
I think the era of close contact, hugs and arms around shoulders is largely over, and we're seeing that happen in real time.
You're hearing calls from employers about coming back to the office and the vaccine excuses people have?
Yeah, this is kind of another headline issue that we're encountering and have over the last week and a half, ever since we all saw the reports on large market leaders deciding to mandate vaccines, and a lot of mid-sized companies have announced to their employees they're doing the same. They've been calling us reporting that their own employees are already raising objections. And surprisingly, few of these objections, John, are the kind of legal or policy points you'd expect, like I have a disability issue or a religious accommodation issue. The lion's share are what we might call vaxcuses, or excuses that employees think will work, will hold water to enable them to avoid the vaccine altogether, but in our view, likely will not.
All right, give me some examples.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything from I can't find the vaccine, I went to the pharmacy four times in a row, wasn't available, to employees simply repeating some conspiracy theory they heard or saw on YouTube or online. And what we found from talking to our clients already, the ones that just announced the plan, they haven't put into effect yet, is while you want to explain, hey, this is our rule, this is like a safety helmet at a construction site, but it applies to everybody, sort of it's our local house rule, it's important to at least engage so employees understand the reasons. And, you know, employees, they're denying the data in some cases. They're hearing something from national media or from D.C., and they just are closing their ears. So companies are really well-positioned if, according to what we're hearing, they make it local. They talk about somebody in the workplace who the employee can talk to who themselves was reluctant. Give them a local list of places where vaccines are available that they can go to. Make sure you really localize your arguments or your message to your own employees.
Even though you and the employee know you're going to win this thing, don't use the hammer right away, huh?
That is exactly right. I mean, there's no reason to hide the fact that this is going to be the rule and the guideline going forward. But the reality is, it is a national discussion. So if employees are raising the fact that none of their friends are vaccinated, well, that's an opportunity to talk to them about, well, you know what, I respect that. I know people who have been hesitant. Do you know people in your circle who've gotten really, really ill from the vaccine, other than missing a day or two of work? Do you happen to know people who got really ill from COVID? Because I do. that kind of localizing of the discussion, personalizing of the anecdotes really makes a difference.
I wonder what they always say if you have a legitimate religious exception. I wonder what that is, right? Which faith and how do you demonstrate you're a member of that faith and so forth? How do you claim a religious exemption? Do you know?
Yeah, well, normally, in normal times and looking at the past history of religious accommodation requests, it might relate to the garb someone wears in the workplace. As long as it's not a safety requirement, people are often allowed under their religious precepts to wear certain clothing, to take breaks perhaps, to pray five times a day, etc. When it comes to the vaccine, we don't really have a track record of people winning cases based on a religious accommodation request. So this is such new territory that we can't even say what the prevailing argument would be. We do know, though, however, John, that if you're a manager and you hear someone say, it's my religious belief, you don't want to simply say no. You want to at least have a process where you talk to someone in HR or authority figure above you, because you want to be consistent with a process, even if at the end of the day, we're basically requiring it of everybody, irrespective of religious request. So you want a process, even if you don't say yes at the end.
Philip Weiss is the president of SciFar at the Work. So if my pastor says it's against God's will, or we just don't believe it's necessary, or whatever the pastor's reasons are, right? And you're a member of that church, I presume that's not sufficient religious grounds.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And what's fascinating is some courts have said you don't even need to be part of an organized religious institution. It can be two people who share a sincerely held belief, and the courts will look at that and evaluate it. So really, the pastor saying something or not saying something is not the deciding factor. It's going to be other considerations. Was the employee consistent in what they asked for? Does this tenant really hold water on its face? That sort of thing. It's like a doctor writing a note saying, oh, my patient had COVID, therefore they don't need the vaccine. Well, the doctor's note does not control over company policy. So it's very interesting. Just because a pastor or a doctor says it does not make it the law or the rule of the land.
Philip Weiss, president at SciFarth at Work. SciFarth is spelled SeyFarth, SciFarth.com for more wisdom like this. Nice to talk to you, Philip.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, John.
There he goes, and here we is. Boy, this next event is kind of perfectly timed. This is Jason Lesnevich. He is the Director of Cultural Tourism at Choose Chicago. ChooseChicago.com is the place to go to find out more about Chicago Friday night flights. Jason, welcome to WGN. How are you?
I'm well, John. Thanks for having me.
Hot and humid, and you're selling cold beer, aren't you?
That's right. It's we're going to have great weather Friday night this Friday. It's a return of Friday night flights. Obviously, we took a small hiatus last year. We had a couple of to-go events where we would box up beers for people, but this is in its fifth season. It's a great program to try out Chicago's craft breweries, which, you know, we probably have more breweries than any city in America. I think we're up to close to 70.
So the idea is you go to these events. Are they always at the same location? This one's a Gallagher Way this Friday. It's a event where you get to sample a bunch of beers, 30 of them, in fact, local breweries. Is it always at Gallagher,
yeah,
or do you move it around?
We do move it around. In years past, we've had six events throughout different neighborhoods. This year, we're going to focus on three. We are doing the one this Friday at Gallagher Way. We're working on a Southside event to really focus on the Southside breweries, and then we'll do a Northside event where we focus on Northside breweries. Those tend to have a smaller amount of participating breweries. This is our larger kickoff event where we might have up to 32 breweries now on hand this Friday. We have two sessions from 5 to 7 is session one, and then 8 to 10 is session two, and we did that this year to allow a certain amount of people. We don't want to pack the place, right? Everyone's, we are still in the COVID era, and we want people to feel comfortable while they're enjoying their beer samples. And a ticket will get you 10 3-ounce samples of any of the breweries that are there. And most breweries bring 2 to 3 different styles. So it's a great opportunity to try a vast array of beer if you want.
can you get the tickets at the door? Do you need to do this in advance?
So I think our later session will sell out by Thursday. Normally, if we are not sold out, you can get them at the door. They are $5 more at the door, so we always encourage you, if you want to come out this Friday, to, you know, purchase it online in advance. You'll save $5 and get you in a little quicker, too. You know, you just show that confirmation and you're all set to go.
Well, I'm reading from your note here. A live DJ, the Smoke Daddy food truck, man, and then local food vendors, and the Cubs game streamed live on the big video board will round out the experience. So if you're not familiar with Gallagher Way, it's that strip of grass. It's a nice little park the Cubs have created between Wrigley Field and Clark. And you've got this space, and they have events, they have bands, they have a Chris Kindle Market there in the wintertime. So that's where you're going to do this Friday night flights. And I think it's smart to do it in two different flights. Let me just sample some of the beers. Alarmist, Bold Dog, Dovetail Brewery, Green Star, Half Acre. Boy, this is an all-star lineup. Haymarket, Lake Effect Brewing, and the list goes on. Pipeworks. Any that are new, surprising, or you're excited about in terms of the breweries?
Yeah, doing this for 5 years, you know, I've sampled a good amount of our breweries. I would say, looking at the list, we have at least 6 newcomers at this event. Some breweries I have opened up that I haven't even heard about, like Casa Humida Cerveza. I believe they're out of the Little Village area or the Pilsen area. Bulldog Beer Company is a new brewery to this pilot project. So we are going to have a lot of great new breweries. Some I haven't sampled. I'm sure some people have not as well. And then, you know, as you said, kind of those all-star lineups that everyone is pretty familiar about, from Half Acre to Pipeworks to Maplewood and some of those others. So it really runs the gamut from very small to large-scale breweries here in Chicago. And one thing different about our events, they're all Chicago breweries. You'll go to a lot of brewery events and they're from the region or something. This is really just focused on Chicago. We want to introduce you to our beer here, and hopefully you'll visit these breweries all throughout the city.
You'll do another one later in the summer for the north side and one for the south side, too. I'm glad you're doing one for the south side. We have here on the Wintrust Business Lunch visited with at least one of the south side microbrews, which you don't think of for, say, the black community in Chicago. They said, we like beer, too, and there's a market for that. There's one in Englewood I know of, and I thought their beer was pretty good. So I'm glad that you're kind of spreading the love on this thing.
Absolutely. Southside actually has a good amount from Pullman, and there's two in Beverly, Pilsen, and Back of the Yards, and yes, the Englewood Brewery. There's a new winery in Bronzeville that's about to open up, so, you know, a couple in the South Loop. So, yeah, the South Side is not short for great beer as well.
One of those. And so do you have dates for the other two events then?
I do. I have September 17th and October 8th. One of those will probably feature some of the brewery's Oktoberfest beers. It's always a fun time as they're working on their early fall and winter edition beers. I have not determined the locations, though, unfortunately, John, but the website's really easy. It's ChicagoFridayNightFlights.com, and, you know, we'll update those locations as soon as we have them.
ChicagoFridayNightFlights.com. You can still get into this Friday night food, 30-plus local breweries, and the Cubs game on the big screen. That just sounds about perfect, Jason. Good luck and congratulations. Sounds like a great event.
Thank you, John. You have a good one.
You do, too. You will. It's 12:42 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got more business news. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A Chicago communications technology startup sees a strong fundraising round. Hologram raised $65 million, according to Cranes. Its SIM cards are used by customers to connect mobile devices like retail sales machines, scooters, industrial sensors, medical devices, and cellular networks. The company's software allows companies to manage large numbers of devices across multiple networks. Hologram's 3,000 clients cover a variety of industries, from healthcare to agriculture. A marijuana company from Arizona is moving a cultivation operation to the south suburbs. Forefront Ventures, which owns Mission Dispensaries on the south side and in Calumet City, says the cultivation center will be located in Madison. The 500-square-feet operation is expected to create hundreds of new jobs by the end of 2022. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you for that, Steve. And now let's go to the other Steve Alexander. Here's the business of food.
Yes, sir. On this radio station, John, over the years, there have been many distinctive, legendary voices. And you and I were in the company of some of those over the weekend at Orion's retirement party, including this fella.
You know, it's hard to say. Generally speaking, we figure we got about 1,000 old antique tractors in there.
That's Max Armstrong, of course, talking about one of his favorite topics, old tractors. His nickname is Tractor Boy, after all, and he and all that old iron will be on display at the Half Century of Progress show in Rentoul in a few weeks.
Yeah, it's only the 10th show, even though we started it in 2003, because the Half Century of Progress is held just every other year. And it coincides with the year when the Farm Progress Show is back in Illinois, and that's at Decatur. So it's just an hour away from one show to the next, and there's just one down day between the two, because the Half Century runs from the 26th to the 29th. The Farm Progress Show then starts on the 31st and runs through September 2nd.
And there's a lot more besides tractors.
When you start to count all of the equipment, when you count the combines that are operating in the field, when you count the corn pickers that are operated, it's usually somewhere in the neighborhood of almost 4,000 pieces of farm equipment.
And you can't have one of these shows without a tractor pull.
There will be a tractor pull each afternoon, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And that draws quite a crowd. You know, it's interesting at the tractor pull just to walk around and see the camaraderie and the friendship. And, you know, many of these guys, sure, they compete against each other, but there's a real fraternity.
The Half Century of Progress show at the Old Air Base in Rantoul, Illinois, August 26th through the 29th. HalfCenturyOfProgress.com for more info. Thank you, Max.
You betcha, sir. Thank you.
Chicago Board of Trade right now. We've got a mixed bag with corn trading down about a penny. Beans are 8.5 cents higher at 12 and make that 13.38 a bushel. Wheat is trading at 7.23. It's up about 12 cents. Corn right now at 5.53. At the Merck, a mixed bag there too, with hogs down another 72 cents at 83.87. Feeder cattle and live cattle are trading higher today. From the farm to your belly. Today's National S'mores Day, which was the original Girl Scouts cookie before there were Girl Scouts cookies. Girl Scouts records show the s'more showed up in 1925. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, we were talking beverages a minute ago, the alcoholic kind. Let's continue the beverage conversation with Amy Guth. PepsiCo and Boston Beer are doing what now?
They have teamed up and they're creating a hard Mountain Dew, which is an alcoholic Mountain Dew. There's going to be three different flavors. And this is part of this bigger push to move into that spiked seltzer, that hard seltzer kind of business. The craft beer really had such a big market share for a while. And as that number started to go down and we saw a decrease in the share of craft beer, fewer and fewer people were drinking it. We started seeing the White Claws and, you know, all of the other products like that. And so this is another one in that space that they're getting into. It's going to be available in early 2022, and it's going to contain about 5% alcohol by volume. And like White Claw, and I think this is part of the reason that a lot of industry watchers have noted why we've seen this explosion in the hard seltzer space, is because they have low sugar, and this one is going to have zero sugar. So for people who are maybe feeling more health conscious about their drinking and want to keep their sugar low, this is another option for them.
A sugar-free alcoholic Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew is the drink that absolutely energizes people. Alcohol is the opposite. This
right.
is just such a weird thing to get my head around. And then I guess it's not sweet, huh?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I think that's part of that, you know, zero sugar maybe, but there's three flavors. There's the original Mountain Dew flavor, and there's a black cherry and a watermelon. But I had the same thought you did. I was like, wait a minute, people get really wired on Mountain Dew and then alcohol brings them down. People are going to be doing some weird stuff on social media once they get this in their system.
So this is happening. And do you know when it's going to be in stores?
It's going to hit shelves in early 2022 is what they say.
Amazon will pay up to $1,000 in damages for dangerous items sold on its site. Talk to me about that.
So this is actually, I feel like, a bigger deal than it looks like. And here's why. The return policy has for a long time, you know, Amazon, if Amazon sold you the item, you deal with Amazon. But if it's a third party seller, you kind of have to go through Amazon and then through the seller. So they've shifted that. And so starting September 1st, they're going to have a completely different sort of a customer service approach to this. So if you bought a thing that was sold by a third party seller and it caused any damages, it's going to help you pursue those with that seller. If they're responsive, the Amazon is willing to step in and pay up to $1,000. There have been some cases of like dog collars that malfunctioned and carbon monoxide detectors, even hoverboards that caused injury, things like that. So Amazon, this is Amazon's way of stepping into up the customer service game a little more, including being willing to kind of put their money on the line if that seller is responsive. Or not responsive, rather.
Yeah, no kidding. This just reminds me a little bit. I think we talked about this the other day about the fact that if you buy a product on Amazon and it's not all it's cranked up to be, I think the example I was talking about the other day was the aerosol oil. If you want to spray oil under your skillet before you cook, you don't want too much, you just want a fine mist, there's a product you can buy on Amazon. The problem is a lot of people say the product's no good, it doesn't work like that. And so they give them bad reviews. And and then the vendor contacts you and says, hey, we'll give you $10 to take that bad review down because that's really bad for us. That violates Amazon's policies. Those vendors are not supposed to contact you directly and ask for you to change your review on Amazon. It's just an interesting relationship between those three parties, the person that creates the product, Amazon that sells it, and the person that buys it. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So agreed. I mean, Amazon has made it very difficult to facilitate any kind of return, but it's always been kind of murky once that third party seller is involved. And I think just the part about reviews, you know, so many of us buy things based on reviews. We say, oh, it's got 4,000 reviews. They're all positive. Maybe this is an okay product. But when it gets into the weeds of how those reviews got there and the ethics of that, it gets really, really quite interesting.
It was interesting, Amy, in the Wall Street Journal, how transparent these companies were. They would literally write to people, text them, email them, and they would say, hey, and by the way, they're not even supposed to have your direct contact information. And they would say, hey, that bad review is very injurious to us. The product costs $10. Here's $10. And we'll give you an extra $10, which I think is low. I may be bought, but not for $20 on this.
Right.
And so please take down that review because I guess those things matter. Talk to me about Elon Musk. What's up with him right now?
Yeah, this is another chapter in the billionaires in space saga, right? So NASA released a report that was talking about how they, or it's a watchdog report rather about NASA, but it was talking about how the NASA program to build the next generation of spacesuits is behind schedule and it's lacking some of the funding. It's going to cost over $1 billion. So Elon Musk kind of threw SpaceX into the ring and said SpaceX could do it. So essentially he's offered, albeit via Twitter, but he's offered to create SpaceX's services to create these spacesuits to help NASA make the next generation of these, you know, these flight suits.
So they would develop them and bear that cost and then, I guess, sell them to NASA, right?
That's right. And so, you know, this is very similar to just, you know, a week or two ago, we saw Jeff Bezos saying, hey, I will foot part of the bill for NASA if I can get in on this moon launch part, you know. So I think this is just kind of this next step. We've seen our billionaires go to, you know, lower orbit of space. And now it's kind of doubling down on, all right, if we're going to offer intergalactic flight, if we're going to sell tickets, if we're going to shuttle NASA astronauts to back and forth to the space station, we're going to build this out and own bigger pieces of it.
But these aren't just to go up in space for a minute and float around and come back down. These are for trips to around the moon or maybe even onto the moon, right?
Right. So that was kind of that initial hurdle. Once we saw those initial flights, you know, then it's going into much further territory. And these spacesuits are for getting out of the spacecraft and doing repairs on the space station, things like that. So that is what is on offer from Elon Musk at SpaceX today.
It's kind of funny how they can insert themselves that way. It seems like they're more flush than the federal government, doesn't it?
I know. It certainly does seem that way.
Yeah. Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Always interesting. Thanks for your help, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.